qua non ci deve essere più niente. Bisogna cominciare subito. Coraggio, al lavoro, buttate giù. Dico bene, autore?
Sì, grazie. Arrivederci, ragazzi. Ci vediamo in un prossimo film.
Lo speriamo.
Welcome to Cinema Italia, a podcast dedicated to the world of Italian cinema. Presented by me, John Bleasdale. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Writers on... Oh, no, wrong one. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Cinema Italia, a podcast which is reveling and celebrating in everything all'italiano, cinema all'italiano, or cinema all'italiano, to give it the correct pronunciation. And today, I'm delighted to be joined by film critic and writer Joanne Titmarsh. And also, you have lived in Italy for how long, Joanne?
I've lived in Italy now for 32 years.
Wow, wow. So that's so you an expert on cinema, but you're also an expert sort of on Italy.
On Venice. I wouldn't say on Italy. I'm like the cooking here is very regional. And so I'm just an expert on Venice. Yeah.
And that's kind of informed your choice of film as well, because Signore and Signori, and the British English title of this, which kind of for once the actual translated title, English title is almost better than the original, is Ladies and... No, it's Birds and Bees and Italians.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, is a wonderful title.
In fact, when I looked up Pietro Germi on Google, I saw this film with this really weird title, and I thought, what the hell is that? God, it's one I've missed. I must go back and have a look. Only to discover it was the film that we were talking about today.
Exactly. Signore, Signori, which is would have translated literally as Ladies and Gentlemen.
Which is a great title.
Ladies and Gentlemen.
Yeah, and it's perfect for the film and it's perfect for the characters, the irony of Ladies and Gentlemen.
Absolutely, and the sort of class associations and the what you were mentioning earlier, you're an expert, expert, I'm using a very loaded term there, but you know very well this region, Venice, and the Veneto, which is a surrounding region, and this is a film which is based here.
Yeah, it's actually kind of quite close to your neck of the woods, because it's set in an anonymous city, which is very obviously Treviso, which is this very wealthy, conservative city on the mainland, not very far from Venice. Two very different cities, despite being very close to each other. Quite interesting.
It's funny because it's sort of like halfway between me and you. It's where I get off the...
Yeah, it's where we could meet if we had to have some kind of, you know, if we were at war and there was a truce between us.
It's our Switzerland.
That would be where we would meet to sign some kind of armistice or something.
Well, what attracted you to this film? I'd never seen it before. It was my first watch. So thanks for that, because I really enjoyed it.
It's a bit of an eye-opener, isn't it?
Oh, wow. It's so good. It's so good. When did you come across this?
I came across it, I think, maybe I saw it even on television. Mm. I just think I caught it on Italian TV and saw that it was set sort of fairly locally. So I really came across it by chance. And I saw it a really long time ago and I hadn't seen it since. And I have to say, I was quite shocked going back to it. And it did make me also go back and look at other Pietro Germi films. And I've got to say, I kind of have fallen in love with him. I didn't really know him all that well. Obviously, Divorzio all'Italiana, which is such a great film. I think that was really one of the only films, and this one, that I knew reasonably well. And I knew a very little bit about him, but not very much. And so it has been a real sort of revelation going back to it. I certainly didn't remember the violence of this film. It's so slappy.
Yeah, it's kind of Punch and Judy violence.
Yeah, which is really shocking, actually. We're not really used to that anymore. And it was just seen as very normal. All these people getting slapped all the time. A husband slapping wives and wives slapping husbands constantly throughout this film. It's so aggressive and nasty.
There's an absolute sort of smackdown fight between a husband and wife right at the very beginning, just to make you to get you into the universe and to know where you stand. No, I must admit, this guy is Pietro Gelmi is a blind spot for me. I've just had a look at him on. I mean, I don't think I've even seen. Divorzio all'Italiana. How's it called in English?
I don't know.
Divorce Italian style? Yeah, I think so. So I haven't even seen that or Seduced and Abandoned, which is his other.
Yeah, they kind of form a trilogy with this film, all about this sort of bourgeoisie society and the hypocrisy of that bourgeoisie society in Italy at the time, because they're all set around the same period in the early 60s. And I think in that period, it's kind of hard not to be a hypocrite almost for a lot of people in Italy, with the weird sort of medieval laws that were still in force and the power of the church that's in force that comes across quite a lot in all of these films. You know, it's like, you can do what you want, but don't get caught and do it quietly and just don't tell anybody. And everybody knows, but it's an open secret. It's just makes you crazy. And one of the characters does actually, in this film, does begin to lose his mind. And there's this brilliant scene in the town square where he's had enough and he's standing on this tower and he just thinks, I can't go on. And that is just such a great scene for me.
I love the capping joke is that his wife bursts through the crowd and says, oh, don't do it. And that's the bit where he goes, oh, right, now I'm definitely.
Exactly. You can come back to me.
Exactly. Oh, no. A fate worse than
so
death.
Good.
Just to give everybody, if you haven't seen this film, a sort of, well, what's the story? Or I suppose I should say the stories.
Yeah, there are a lot of stories and it seems very complicated and it does seem like a sort of classic farce where you've got a group of friends and one of the main characters, Tony, he decides that he really fancies the wife of his friend who's a doctor. So he says to his friend, oh, I've got this terrible problem. I'm impotent. It's such a disaster. I'm so depressed. And his friend, who you think would have a bit of a bedside manner and be a bit tactful, laughs his head off, tells everybody about his friend's impotence at a party, and then lets his friend go home with his wife, thinking, he can't get it up. She'll be fine. And his wife is this absolutely gorgeous blonde, ditzy blonde bombshell who Tony then seduces and gets caught quite literally with his pants down. And that's just the beginning of one of many outrageous sort of events that happen. So there are a lot of infidelities. There are a lot of... But there's also a real love story.
I mean, to just help maybe with the plot, there are sort of three main sections. So it's like a kind of portmanteau film.
It's very much a three-act.
And so it's the same group of friends and it's the same place and the same setting. And the stories to some degree interconnect, but they're sort of like three quite distinct things. As the one you've just described, I mean, that is like sort of party scene where you get to know, you know, you spend the entire evening from them getting together to them arriving at a party to them going to another nightclub, and then this
the nightclub is just brilliant.
It's just superb, and it's like watching something out of Fellini, but Fellini who's really got stinko. You know, he doesn't care about making art. He just wants to have a fun.
Well, it's really interesting that you say that, because Fellini called Pietro Germi il grande falegname of Italian cinema. And he saw him, a falegname is a carpenter, and he really saw him as this like master craftsman. And when I heard that, I thought, it's kind of interesting that Fellini would call him a craftsman, which could be seen as disparaging in some way, because, you know, Fellini is obviously the artist, and then you have the artisan, you know, which might seem like a lesser kind of person, but it's actually Germi who called himself an artisan. So Fellini was really just saying, yeah, you know, you are a real master craftsman. And they worked together a few times. Oh, so Fellini and Germi go way back. They collaborated. Fellini co-wrote a couple of his screenplays, of Germi's screenplays. I can't remember which ones. I think In Nome della Legge, which you would absolutely love and could have been one of my choices, because In Nome della Legge is a very early film of Germi's from 1949. So it's around the same sort of time as The Bicycle Thieves, and it has got touches of neorealism to it, but it is quite literally a spaghetti western, because it's just like a western, but it's set in Sicily. And Fellini co-wrote that and something else that I can't remember. So they really admired each other and knew each other's work really well.
Excellent. Yeah, I mean, it's so funny, because you say about the craftsman and the Fellini's praise, but this film won the Palme d'Or.
Yeah. Yeah, not bad for a carpenter.
And it is a full-on sex comedy. There's no sort of pretentiousness to it, or, you know, it's really loud and in your face, and it's broad characterizations. And those crowd scenes, it's really interesting you brought that up about the craftsmanship, because those crowd scenes where you've got how many characters, like 8 or 9 speaking named roles, it's like three or four couples and a couple of bachelors who turn up, but you know exactly who everybody is within the space of a minute. You know who the boring guy is, who everybody avoids.
Yeah, that's so funny. Oh no, it's Scarabeau. Don't talk to him.
And when you hear him talk, you understand immediately, oh no, actually you'll find that the center left think this and the center right, and he's like, oh, run away.
And he's such a terrible character that when they arrive at this soiree, the host sees him and says, that's it, I don't want to have this party. It's
goes to bed. The host goes to bed and just leaves them. Oh, it's genius. It's so funny.
It's funny, but it's absolutely scathing as well.
I want to circle back a little bit to just that, to sort of knockdown fight, because I think when, you know, you highlighted this, flagged this up earlier, and you flagged this up before I even saw the film, you sort of said, oh, it's more violent than I remember, John. It reminded me a little bit of Father Ted. Do you remember the couple who are always fighting with each other? And then when the priest turns up, it's like, oh, hello, Father. And they're the picture of the perfect. It really reminded me of that they're so violent with each other. They're basically dragging each other around by the hair.
It's incredible. And I was amazed at that. And I was amazed at how loud it was. I had no recollection of how shouty it was. But beneath all of that shoutiness, you do get this other sense of all of the machinations. You know, they're all shouting, but everyone, there's a woman who is called Ippolita, it's no coincidence that she's named after like the queen of the Amazons, you know. She's like, she is the queen of that set. And she's married to Tony, this awful kind of philanderer. And she controls everybody. And she controls not just all of the men and women in their social circle. But she controls the churchmen of the town. And to an extent, the people in the bank. She controls everything. It's amazing. And what she is prepared to do to save face, I don't think we want to give away too many spoilers. It's pretty shocking.
Yeah, that scene knocked me out, in the sense that I was like, whoa, I was not expecting it to go in that direction.
Right? It is. It's a real shocker.
But okay, you mentioned something earlier as well, which I want to come, well, as we go through the film. So there's this first film of sort of infidelity, and it could be something from the Decameron. You know, it could be one of those little short stories of how a monk got into a nunnery sort of short story. And it's very ribald, and it's very, you know, it ends with them sort of singing opera and freeze framing, which is also kind of like, wait a minute, they're singing Puccini, and it's the music is with them. And I said earlier on, it's not arty or pretentious, it's in your face and blah, blah, blah. But it's that's not to say it isn't radical and daring. It's doing really interesting stuff as well from a sort of cinematic point of view.
In every way, like the writing, the names of the characters, you know, the priest that's called Don Schiavon, which is a really common name in the Veneto, but it does also mean slave. He is enslaved to Ippolita and to all of her, the members of her social group, who obviously feed the church.
Yeah, because she's sort of on all the committees and doing all the you know, the fundraising and what have you.
Exactly.
And has this, you know, the eye towards the reputation.
So they have to kowtow to Ippolita, always. Everybody has to.
It's so good. And yet she has a husband who is everybody knows is the Don Juan of the, or the Don Giovanni, I should say, of the piece. And she is completely, that's fine, as long as it's not public, as long as it's not.
And then we move on to the other story, which is the love story, which is the man who works in the bank, and it is the Catholic bank of the Colli Ugani, the Uganian hills. So this is kind of crucial. Osvaldo, poor Osvaldo, who's married to the worst harpy.
I'm going to let you describe this bit. I'm not going to say anything at this point.
She's so horrible. Gilda. I've got to say as well, before we move on, I mean, they're all fantastic performers. And Nora Ricci is Gilda as this awful, nagging wife that just browbeats her husband at every opportunity. But Osvaldo falls in love with this very, very sweet girl, who works in a local cafe. And so that's kind of the second act, is all about his affair and their falling in love. And at a certain point, his harridan wife says, oh, you know, like, you can leave and get out and you're no good. And he just thinks, oh God, of course, I can just go. I can be free. And so the rest of this act is all about him searching for freedom and happiness and love, and finding love with a decent woman and just moving on. And he is opposed at every step. And it was interesting to think about the period. You know, we have the Carabinieri, the police that come and arrest men in this sort of seedy hotel, because adultery was still a crime during that period in the 60s. And so he, you know, you could be fined or go to prison for adultery in Italy. And they do everything to him. You know, they threaten the loss of his job,
because it's a Catholic bank.
Sorry? It's a Catholic bank, of course. And so, you know, all of these parts of society, they're all interlinked, and all of these different people, the bank, the church, and his group of friends, do everything to stop him from pursuing what would probably be a really nice life. And instead, he has to go back to Gilda. And so that thus ends the second act of this film. And it's all looking a little bit darker now, you know, funny as it is. And then we go on to the third act, which is just awful. Here we see all of the group of men in action, going after, it starts with the guy that owns a shoe shop. The friend that owns the shoe shop he seduces a girl who's this kind of country bumpkin. She never really speaks. I don't think she ever speaks. And she's always eating. She's like this sort of ruminant, you know? She's like this sort of bovine creature, very beautiful, kind of just like this little rustic girl in town, probably on market day or whatever. And she goes from man to man because they call each other and they go on a very intricate sort of race around town to move her from one friend to the other, from the shoe shop owner to the doctor to, you know, I can't remember what the other men do. And then it transpires that she's 16 and then they know that they're in trouble. And so this is where Hippolyta has her moment to rescue the men and to rescue all of their reputations, this kind of collective reputation that they have. And that is a pretty shocking story. And Jeremy, I have to say, has this obsession, this male obsession with beautiful, virginal, or at least very young nubile girls. It's kind of a thread, a very nasty thread that runs through his sort of tapestry of films, because in Nome della Legge, there's a 16-year-old girl that a man wants to marry, and he kind of ruins her relationship with her partner. In Sedotte Abbandonate, again, you know, it's a 16-year-old girl with a ruined reputation. And so Jeremy, I think he really likes women. He was brought up in a household of women. His dad died when he was very young. So I think he does seem to be kind of a champion of women. And he does really look at this male gaze and is sort of horrified, but acknowledges always that it's there and ever present in all parts of society. Because if you go through his films, you know, it can be the middle-class man, it can be the kind of mafia guy, but it's a constant. And so it's interesting, I think, his view of what men are prepared to do to get the 16-year-old girl.
And yet, it is really interesting how, I mean, that thing about the male gaze is kind of quite literally, he uses like keyholes in the, like they're peering through, and there's a lots of closing doors and turning signs around to say back in a minute and things like that. And so you know full well what is happening. There's very, this is a film full of single entendres. But what I found interesting as well is that this girl who, yeah, the wonderful description you just gave us, a ruminant, she's kind of like this Lolita character, but there's no, she's not like an innocent necessarily who's been, I mean, there is a fear, it's, put it this way, it's not like a patronizing view of her. You know, I think there's a feeling that she knows what she's doing in a way, that she's going from these, and she's getting something back. She's
got a pair of gold shoes from first guy, you know, and she's constantly got something to eat. She goes out for a nice dinner, and yeah, she's aware that there's an exchange.
Yeah. Yeah. And like when they find her later, sort of, she's seen again later on in the, sort on the farm, she's there like with a big insecticide thing on her back, pumping it against her, and it's like, oh, I can see why she wanted to go to town and, you know, get
and have a good time and be, you know, be treated like a woman. And at no point, you know, it should be stated that at no point does she seem to perceive herself as a victim. Not that doesn't mean that she isn't, but she certainly doesn't feel like she's victimized. And, you know, she grew up on a farm in real poverty and isn't treated all that brilliantly. And she probably felt kind of nice.
That what you're saying as well about the sort of satirical intent of this episode, I think, is brilliantly illustrated when the journalist is sort of partly ends up narrating the end of the story, if you like, and for the brilliantly titled newspaper, The Independent, because he's anything but, and he's preparing this finally, justice is good. You know, justice is the same for everybody.
For these six men, or however it is,
finally, the law is going to do what it has to do. And then he gets a series of phone calls, which tells him, oh, of course, yeah, I'm going to take that name out. And
redact.
until there's nothing left of the story, essentially.
And then, and the irony is that then the farmer and gets into trouble for spreading falsehoods about these poor men.
That, you know, oh, how dare you say that stuff about Kevin Spacey? You've ruined his career. Yeah, and they find themselves on the harsh end of the law then, and also the media, because that story will be published.
So I think that Jeremy really is someone who, despite winning at Cannes and despite getting an Oscar for Divorcio all'Italiana and so on, I kind of feel like Jeremy's been a bit forgotten and a bit sidelined. And that is one of the reasons that I chose the film. Because it's set local to us. And I thought that period in particular, like the 1950s or even from the 40s, up to the 60s, we often think of Rome and Cinecittà as the kind of epicenter of Italian filmmaking. But Jeremy, who is from Genoa originally, he kind of took Italians on a bit of a road trip and took a lot of film out of Rome. He focused on Sicily a lot and made, I think, five films in Sicily, which is really interesting. And I kind of like the non-Rome-centric, the regionality of Jeremy, which isn't to say that he didn't kind of have films that he made in Rome as well.
He's got...
I think he's kind of a fascinating filmmaker and definitely someone that if you... don't know as a director, he's absolutely worth watching. And he was a little bit sidelined in Italy because of the times, because I think the fact in the 60s, that period of kind of social upheaval here, he was seen to be a little bit middle of the road, like this kind of Christian Democrat type person, and wasn't far left enough. He likes kind of law and order a little bit too much. And so I think he didn't really get the praise that he deserved, maybe for political reasons, but he's a great filmmaker.
Do you think you can see that a little bit in the film as well, in that there is a satire, it certainly takes no prisoners in terms of showing hypocrisy.
Yeah, he's really brave, actually. I don't know many filmmakers that were that damning of Italian society and saying, like, look at your stupid laws, look at how you behave, and using Treviso, which is one of the wealthiest cities in Italy, basing his film there to say, like, look at these people, they're disgusting. And I don't know, I think it's pretty brave.
I didn't find the people as disgusting. I thought there was an anarchy to their lives and a libido to their lives, which was bouncing against the hard edges of structures that they were living under. You know, so they're all calling each other by these honorifics. It's all ingegnere, avvocato, consigliere, commendatore, professore. You don't even call the doctor. He's professore, to show an even higher thing. And the professore is the guy who just is screaming with laughter at his patients, but it's screaming with laughter. He's so, you know, he's like, he feels... who would be like a Rodney Dangerfield character or something? He's just absolutely or Zero Mostel in the producers. He's just so over the top. And you do, I think there is an element of kind of affection for some of these people. Yeah, certainly some of them are. But I'll give you an example of what I mean. Is when they think they're going to jail, they're constantly joking with each other, really cruel jokes, and really, but
yeah, they do have a great banter. It's brilliantly written. You completely believe all of them.
When a shoe lands in the middle, because they're one of their, you know, they're bantering in the square and they're having this, they've got their table and they joke and they observe people and they gossip, and a shoe lands and one of them turns around and says, "Oh, that's taking a joke too far." And I just thought that moment is really excellent, because it's like these guys don't know any limits at all.
Yeah, they have no parameters. The anonymous letters. There are loads of anonymous letters. It's a bit of a sort of an Oscar Wilde kind of what's the word? Sort of theme that runs through this. They write each other anonymous letters, like at a party.
Or to their wives as well. Oh yeah, at the party. Yeah, I forgot about that. But somebody even dobs him into his wife.
Who could it be? Oh my God, yeah. And anonymous letters appear in another film of Jeremy's as well. I think in Divorzio all'Italiana, they're anonymous letters. So it's something that he kind of likes putting in.
There's a brilliant bit where Osvaldo has received the letter and he's so scared to open it that he just opens it a little bit and he sees it's written, it's signed
by like a friend.
It's like, oh no, I know it's going to be terrible now. Somebody's...
Yeah, yeah. It's beautiful in its awfulness. Yeah, and there's a great moment in the film when right in the beginning, in the first act, when Tony is caught with his braces dangling out of his trousers, and the doctor says to him, they're having a big fight, and everyone's getting slapped as usual, and then Scarabella rings the doorbell, and they stop fighting, and they go, "Who's that?" And the doctor says to Tony, "Che resti fra noi," like, "This stays between us." And that's kind of the mantra of the film. It's like, we can behave, we can be fighting and rolling around on the floor and fucking each other's wives, and we can be doing all kinds of things, but it stays in our circle.
It's almost like he's addressing the menage a trois right there. It's his wife and Tony, and it's just like, this is okay, this to be continued, you know, in more ways than one. Because you don't think Tony and Naomi are going to give up on this either. This is just going to be a continuing thing for the rest of the time. But here's a question. I mean, one of the things I wondered about is, this is very much a sex comedy, and there are sex comedies, you know, Marcello Mastroianni. We've already looked at the priest's wife in an earlier episode, and obviously he's worked with Jeremy as well,
which is another Veneto-based film. Yeah, Dino Risi made lots of films set in Venice and in the Veneto. Yeah,
absolutely. Oh, and we should also say that, because, you know, for English people who are English language speaking and they're watching these and they don't know Italian particularly well, it's not only that people have different accents in different regions, they also speak different dialects. So a lot of the time there will be certain turns of phrases and certain ways of talking, which will be very, very obvious as soon as you...
Yeah, although most of the actors in this film are not from the Veneto. And so if you are from this... the region, you can hear, like, my partner came in, he's Venetian, and he came in and watched a little bit of the film with me, and I had said to him, "Oh, I think it apparently the accents are a bit more like Padua than Treviso, but I can't really tell." And he said, "They're not either." It's, you know, there's this sort of, it's a very generic Veneto kind of, it's like talking a bit like that, and
the Birmingham of Italy.
This is an idea, and there are some little expressions, yeah, like you said, that are very much part of this northeastern area. Yeah, it's funny. Yeah, that's quite unusual, I think, that Jeremy decided to go, though, on this sort of journey that takes you from Sicily in his films all the way up to the northeast. So he puts himself out of his comfort zone, definitely, which I really like. And Treviso is just such a perfect place for this film.
Yeah, there's a couple of bits where I thought, oh, that's where I catch the train.
Yeah. Had a coffee there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's behind the Duomo. That's behind the cathedral. Also, I think maybe something that has not sort of helped his reputation, perhaps, is the fact that the sex comedy in Italy has become a kind of kind of degraded as a genre, as you've got sort of cinema panettone, and you've had lots of sort of all-star cast sex comedies, which usually come out around about Christmas time, hence sort of cinema panettone, which is sort of Christmas cake comedy cinema, sorry. And I just wonder if that sort of means that as a genre it's sort of no longer seen, it's sort of relegated to afternoon television, really.
I think that's true, maybe of those later films that he made in the 60s. But if you look at his earlier work, like those Sicilian films, they're not sex comedies at all. And the spaghetti Western, which quite possibly, and some people say, is like the first Italian Western, it reminded me of, what's that, Gregory, is it The Big Country, where the Gregory Peck, okay, so the magistrate who goes from Palermo to this tiny backwater town in Sicily to go and work as the local magistrate, he's a bit like he's like the Gregory Peck character in The Big Country, arriving with his like modern newfangled ways. But it's also one of the first films that really talked about the mafia. And that would be a really interesting film to talk about just in its own right. And if you look at other works of his, there's one called Il Camino della Speranza, which I think has a literal translation in English, like The Path to Hope or The Path of Hope, where he talks about people trafficking. It's really interesting. And again, it's not a sex comedy at all. It's about men who worked in a sulfur mine and they have to leave their pokey little village in Sicily. And their aim is to go and start a new life in France. And so he's made really interesting films and quite revolutionary kind of topics, I think, as well. Some of his films have aged really well in that respect. You know, we still, look at us, we're still making mafia films. We're still talking about that. We're still making films. Of course, we're making films about people trafficking and the exploitation of people who are trying to start a new life in a new country. And he was doing that in like 1949. And so I think he definitely merits a little bit of a retrospective.
Camino della Speranza is Path of Hope, and In the Name of the Law was the year before that, is the Western you're talking about, both of which were the Fellini co-scripted for 49 and 50. You know, before he's doing this trilogy of the sex comedies, the Divorce Italian Style, Seduced and Abandoned, and this film.
Yeah, although, I mean, Seduced and Abandoned's not a comedy. It's a lot more serious than the two. It's kind of sandwiched between two comedies, but it's definitely the more serious and more dramatic of the three. I mean, I haven't seen a lot of other films of his. Those are kind of, that's about, the ones I've talked about are the only ones I really know. I don't know much about any of the other ones. But there was a film, his last film, Alfredo Alfredo, I discovered, is with Dustin Hoffman.
Yeah, 1972. Yeah,
Stefania Sandrelli, who was often used as his sort of ingenue character in those sex comedies. Yeah, I've no idea what it's like. I've never heard of it until I looked him up the other day.
Yeah, and that's really early in Dustin Hoffman's career as well. I mean, he's...
72.
I mean, it's in the first flush of it, let's say. Quite a catch.
Yeah. But there are a lot of those really great directors like Germi and Fellini and De Sica and so on. They're all kind of like interrelated. And you know, when you watch their films, you'll find actors that are in the same film. So people like the incredibly handsome, oh God, what was his name? He's a footballer, Raf. He's not in our film. He's in a different film. He was in Riso Amaro. And he's also in The Path of Hope. And he's called Raf Vallone. And he's a really interesting character. He looks like Burt Lancaster. But you find that there are all these sort of stories that they're all part of the same history of that brilliant period of Italian filmmaking.
Yeah, it's amazing how many of these films, you know, Marcello Mastroianni turns up in, or Claudia Cardinale is in a few of his films, and yeah, you're just like, wow, they had such a there's such an explosion of talent in the 50s and 60s in Italy. It's unbelievable. And also, not only in cinema, also in literature and in music, you know, and popular music.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And actually, Pietro Germi made a couple of films that I don't know and I haven't seen, but with Celentano, with Adriano Celentano, and I think with, who's the other guy? Gianni Morandi.
Right, yeah, both huge pop stars of their day.
No idea what those films are like. I imagine they're a bit, I don't know if they're like Cliff Richard films or I have no idea.
Well, I think Celentano made, because Celentano made a bunch of films with Ornella Muti as his co-star as well, and I think they were a little bit more, he certainly took them more seriously, or there was more sort of an idea of.
Yeah, he was very much an actor, and not someone like Elvis, who, you know, had to sort of just sing in a bunch of films. But yeah, I think Adriano Celentano very much was just like it kept those two kind of two jobs separate.
And of course, Celentano shows up in La Dolce Vita doing his sort of like nonsense American singing to rock and roll. And it's like,
I have
oh,
to
okay.
say, Kalim spoke about La Dolce Vita on your show, Kalim Aftab, and I thought that was really brave of him because when I thought about choosing a film, I immediately went to The Bicycle Thieves. I was like, oh, I'll do The Bicycle Thieves because it's my favorite, such a lovely film, and how could you not talk about it? And then I thought, oh, I'll probably spend like half of the time crying. Oh, the poor little boy in a bicycle. So I thought, I'll choose something else. But La Dolce Vita is a good one, is a really great film to choose because you've got to really, yeah, everybody knows La Dolce Vita or things say that La Dolce Vita to an extent, or we all know images of it for sure. And actually, I have got a good Fellini story that a friend of mine who lives in Venice is from Rome and he is a bit older than us. He's like in his 60s and he grew up very near Cinecittà and he lived like lots of Italians, like with the extended family, and so he lived with his granny. And when Fellini was making a film, he would say to one of his crew, "Oh, go and knock on Mrs. What's-her-face's door and see if she's free," because she was like the perfect archetypal kind of old grandma. And so they would just kind of go in and say, "Oh, hello, Mr. Fellini. Was wondering if you were free today." And she would go over and like appear in some of his films. And my friend also appeared in a couple of sort of dodgy kind of Bud Spencer westerns that were enchanted that. Yeah.
Oh my God, that's amazing. What an amazing, just the way of the ad hoc way of casting someone as like
Right, but
the.
she just looked the part, you know, how Fellini, you know, they're so perfect, all of those extras, and he handpicked all of them. And my friend's granny was one of the stars.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's what makes La Dolce Vita. That's one of the many, 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 many things which makes La Dolce Vita so good is that. You know, the people sitting in the two tables back in the cafe are dressed as interestingly and look as interesting as the people who you're following. So, you know, every frame will have someone wearing sunglasses that you think, wow, I want to know about them.
Yeah, well, Jeremy, I think, is also great at that, and particularly, but well, in our film in Signore Signori, what's amazing is the women are absolutely gorgeous. Even the ones that aren't that gorgeous are still way better looking than the men. There's almost not. I don't think there are any attractive men in that film, are there? Maybe Tony.
Osvaldo when he falls in love, because when he doesn't fall in love, he's a sort of a big potato head. He's a big lump, and then he's got, and then he goes and has
And then he goes
a
and gets his
haircut.
beard cut off. And he goes, "That's it." Because like, he wants to look young and dashing. So he goes to the barber and says, "Oh, that's it. Off with the beard and mustache." And then he looks at himself in the mirror, covers his face, the lower part of his face, and goes, "Wait, just the beard." And then he gets a brilliant haircut. gets the fast car. There's a great scene when he picks up his beautiful young lover in his new sports car. And then she's worried because she's just been fired from her job and she's a bit upset. And he goes, "Oh, are you crying?" And she's like, "Oh, no, it's raining." And he doesn't know how to put the roof on his car. And it's just, you just know it's going to end in disaster.
Yeah, absolutely. And his situation, I think, is typified in a very amusing way at the beginning, when he sort of takes out, and you think it's going to be like a box of little sweets or something. He takes out a little box and it's got loads of little folding bits, and it's two earplugs to stick in his ears. And the sound goes out of the film. Yeah, another sort of...
That is used to such brilliant effect twice in that film. I just absolutely love the earplugs.
It's a brilliant film, and I think this will not be the last Jeremy film that we will be looking at.
I really hope not. I mean, I would love it if somebody, obviously, it would be great if someone chose something like Divorzio all'Italiana, but I think In Nome della Legge, as a fantastic Italian Western, would make a great topic of conversation. And he has brilliant, non-professional actors in there, and the young men in the film, in Il Cammino della Speranza, in Path of Hope, they all look like they're related in a good way to a young Marlon Brando. All these miners in the sulfur mine, you're like, oh my god, hello. It's like a Dolce & Gabbana advert for an aftershave. They're gorgeous. And then you see a lot of the other actors who are older, and they're probably not even that much older, and they're, you know, they've got like a random selection of teeth still in their mouths, and they just look so old and weathered by their hard lives, and he depicts them beautifully. So I really hope somebody chooses another Jeremy film.
Yeah, well, yeah, you hear that, folks.
I've thrown down my gauntlet.
Exactly, the gauntlet has been thrown down, and it will be picked up, it will be seized.
I hope so, because I think he's a great topic of conversation for sure.
Yeah, and there to be sort of rediscovered and put on your letterboxed watch list.
Yeah, and a lot of them are available on YouTube. So for I don't know, for speakers though who don't speak Italian, I'm not sure if they're all subtitled. That's the only thing. And although I did say that he'd been sort of sidelined a bit, he has had quite a few films restored. One of them was chosen as a Cannes classic, and I think they restored it, but I can't remember which one. Only a few years ago, actually, 2021, I think. But I can't remember. It might have been.
Because I think it was this one, because it won the.
Because it won the Grand Prix. Because I don't think they had the Palme d'Or at the time.
Listen, thanks so much, Joanne, for suggesting this film. It was a first for me. So I loved sort of meeting Pietro in this way. And it's not going to be the last film I watch by him.
Great.
Thanks so much.
Thank you, John. Ciao.
Arrivederci ragazzi, ci vediamo in un prossimo film.
Lo speriamo.